podcast. This is episode 48, I think. We've been like recording this these hangouts, talking about what has been happening lately in the PHP world for about 4 years. It's quite a long time. Most hangouts podcasts stop before that because people sort of get fed up, but we never get fed up. And this time, every year with me, Artur Sosin from Latvia. Hello, Artur, how are you doing?
Yeah, hello. I'm kind of got fed up of JavaScript topics, so decided to hear more about what's happening in PHP world, and that's why I'm here, yeah.
Okay. It's you are alternating between one and the other, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and this month we have several interesting topics as usual, some related with upcoming PHP releases. And let's start reviewing what has been going on, starting precisely with the release of PHP 5.5.13. It's yet another release to mostly to fix bugs. There seems to be nothing really new, so it's a maintenance release. And along with it, there is a similar release for 5.4.29, and there is already actually it's basically the same as the practically the same bugs that were fixed. There were some security vulnerabilities fixed here, and they do not seem to be very serious, so I don't think there is much to talk about this. So let's move on to comment just a little bit about PHP 5.6, which is basically very close to a final release. There is already at least one release candidate that I remember. Yes, that's the first one. And there is not really nothing new to say because it's just the 5.6 version that is getting ready for release. Most the bugs are being fixed. There are no features being added by now. It's just stabilizing the release, and there is nothing really new to comment about this. The features that we are expecting are already known. I don't know, Artur, are you hoping for this release, or maybe you are not really following it or to use in your developments?
Yeah, well, I'm not kind of guy that always goes after the latest, the newest. Usually, if it's working, that it's good for me, you know. If it's not broken, don't mend it. I don't know. Can you tell me what could be an interesting new feature in this release?
Yeah.
Is there something anticipated?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, in my opinion, it's nothing really interesting. It's more some features that some people think they need, but if you have not followed the previous episodes, probably you're not going to miss. There are some things related to Veridix, which is a new syntax for specifying functions that take along a variable number of parameters, and a few other things. Actually, I don't think you'll miss them much if you have not been following it, because you really do not need them. And as you said, if it is not broken, you shouldn't bother to fix it. Upgrade just to benefit of features that you probably do not need. Now moving on to somewhat a topic related with new features, which is the plan end of life for PHP 5.3. It is about 1 year since it was release, and as it was planned, is they will start stop issuing new releases, but there will be I would say a final release that is being planned to be launched. I think it will happen in July sometime, probably at the same time that PHP 5.6.0 final release is made. And well, this is just something that was planned. I don't think whoever is using PHP 5.3 will stop using it. I don't know, Artus, which version you are usually using in your sites?
Yeah, well, that is actually kind of interesting topic, because just recently I received an email. I have a hosting account, a shared hosting account for some personal projects, for some client work, just to show them what I make, what is the progress and stuff like that. And just recently I received an email, your PHP version was upgraded to 5.3. So,
oh, all right. So no,
just about a month ago I received the email. So
no, that is the end of life. So it doesn't matter if there are three or four versions behind, and I think that is probably a very common thing. The hosting companies do not upgrade versions of existing customers, because they know that if they upgrade, the site stopped working, and it's usually the developer's fault, but the site owners do not care. They need to complain to somebody and complain to the hosting company. That's why they avoid to upgrade. So if they upgrade it, it's probably that they have also upgraded the distribution that they are using on the server. So it's not, it was probably not just PHP, it's probably something else.
It was a forced upgrade for them, and they had to, because the distribution was...
Yeah, that's probably more like it. And I think that's usual, and I'm sure this frustrates many core developers, because they are adding many features that they think that are interesting. They improve performance, they improve security, and the hosting companies do not care, because even if they have a vulnerable PHP versions running, they do not follow. Or even if they follow the what is happening in terms of new releases in PHP world, they simply do not care, and they do not comply with. I mean, they just get stuck with older versions, because it's less maintenance problems with their customers' broken sites than having to deal with eventual security problems. It's a bit odd, but that's the way it goes. So, they already know what would be the consequences. But sometimes, even if there are known vulnerabilities, like for instance, there before PHP 5.3.11, I think there was a serious vulnerability that could simply stop the whole servers with a single request. Make them almost get stuck in an infinite loop, and then. But most of the users do not care. We already talked about it, like I think it was last year. But the world doesn't care. If it gets stuck, somebody stops your server, they'll deal with it later. And okay, but well. Now people should know that PHP 5.3. There will be a final release, and this just means that there will be no new versions with no features. Probably there will only be updates with security fixes, and even that will end after a while. I don't know if it is 1 year or so. So who really, really cares about these new versions should pay attention, because the end of life of 5.3 is here, and maybe you should already test your applications with a newer PHP version. Because there are some backwards incompatibilities, so you may want to probably review your applications to see if they work with newer versions. I've been doing that for a while, but I have not switched in production, because I need more time to do tests, since it is not really, really urgent.
So what version are you using?
Well, in production, I'm using like the latest 5.3, but in the developer environment, I'm using 5.4. Mm-hmm. And but by the time if I decide to upgrade, I'll already jump to the latest version, because I don't get far behind until the next upgrade. But okay, now let's move on with another topic. This time related with new features that are being planned for future PHP versions. There was a proposal here for a feature that is basically to improve the support for the recently added type hinting features in the Reflection API. So the Reflection API allows you to inspect classes, so you can know about its variables, functions, and parameters, and using the type hinting support, you eventually also can learn about what types of are expected to function parameters, and so this would allow those that for instance create tests using mock classes to replicate the classes and create mock classes that you can fill in with your mock code, so you can use this for testing without much trouble in rewriting the classes, copy and pasting code. Artus, I don't know if you use any, so create your own tests using mock classes. I don't know if you feel this would be useful for your purposes.
Yeah, well, not in PHP maybe, but in other languages, yes. For creating unit tests that especially work with some third-party service, it's the best way is to create the mock class and emulate all the responses.
Yeah.
That's understandable. So, what exactly does the this addition add to existing API? Is that it's easier to query the information type, right?
Well, this is to, from what I understood, this is to get the types of the parameters that you define in type hinting. So, since PHP has type hinting for function parameters. From what I understood, there was not yet support for Reflection to get those type hints. Well, this is what I understood, but here it talks about annotations, and maybe that's what they mean with type annotations. I confess that I have not been studying this in detail, so probably I'm not putting it in accurate terms. But anyway, this is just a comment about something that is planned.
Yeah.
And there is not much more to say about it. Anyway, because you talked about that you use tests in other languages. Which language do you mean?
Well, latest one was Java, unfortunately. I had.
You are programming in Java.
I do not program in. Well, I do for Android a bit, but I have a quality assurance project for Java, so it's something different.
Right, but you know, if you program in Java, you are not going to heaven when you die.
Yeah.
You go to hell. It's a sin.
Does Android count as a Java?
Well, I think you have to program in Java, and although in reality Android does not really run a Java virtual machine, it's something else of Google. But I guess you have to program in Java, and then it translates to whatever is the bytecode that Google uses. It's still Java.
Yeah.
For programmers, it's still Java. That's for mobile applications, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Which each one has to carry his own cross in the back.
Google made me.
I hope it's not too heavy. Okay. Well. Anyway, and now moving on to another topic, we are going to talk about something that actually was meant to be a new proposal, but somebody somehow already implemented it. It would be something to have a sort of object-like syntax for accessing objects. I mean the primitive data types like strings and arrays and booleans and whatever. So the interesting part is that this is supposed to be a new proposal, but there was already an extension that was developed by Nikita, and he sort of created this extension to implement things that you can write your PHP code as if you are dealing with strings and arrays as objects. So instead of calling strlen, you would call the length object. A length function on the supposedly it would be an object, but in reality it is not an object, it's just a formula putting it as if it is an object. I don't think this will really allow to treat it as an object. Maybe I'm mistaken, I don't think you can create subclasses extending the string class, I don't know if this is what they meant. From what I understood, I don't think that is the purpose. It's to make it somehow let you treat these primitive data types as if they were objects, so you could even do some chaining, because if a function returns another string, you can also treat that string as an object and chain the multiple functions, and they say that they make it more readable. Well, it depends, because if you are used to a different syntax, I'm not sure if it is very readable. It seems readable for me. I don't know what other people think. Arthur, what do you think about this feature, which is for now is not really implemented in PHP, but eventually will become available in future versions?
Well, I have a question then. If someone codes in Java, then he goes to hell. But what happens with the man who has to make PHP more like Java?
Well, I think he deserves the same punishment.
not a larger one, no. Well, actually, I don't know. Even JavaScript, even Lua has the similar approach where you can handle strings as objects, maybe not probably not integers, not numbers, but strings, arrays. So it seems kind of a natural way to do it. I don't think it's bad.
Yeah. Well, it's because in reality it's not really objects. You cannot. I don't think the intention is to allow you to do everything that you really do with objects. But okay, if people are more comfortable with this syntax, that's fine, except that it won't be backwards compatible, because there is not such feature in the past versions. So whatever code that you write using these features will not work in past PHP versions, which probably is not a real problem for those that want to use it, because they are not distributing code for others to use in different PHP versions, so that should be fine. But you should be concerned with that to, in case you are not if you are developing code for sharing with others. And also related with this feature, there is this proposal here. They call it auto-boxing, and basically I think it is the same thing, except it is a more formal proposal to make this available in the upcoming PHP releases, eventually PHP 5.7 or so. And well, for now the this is just a proposal, and I did not quite follow the discussions, but this is not really a new thing. There was there were similar discussions back in 2005, and it seems to address the desire of some developers. Not really, really an important feature, but okay, well, it's yet another one of those features of newer PHP that most of us will not use, but at least some people will be happy because PHP is getting somehow more modern, because people are benefiting of features that they didn't have before, so they feel good because they think PHP is going through some progress, although it's just syntactic sugar.
Yeah.
Okay, now moving on to this time to comment about an article that actually I released it. Let me share the screen here. And basically, this article was to talk about a security vulnerability that affects, may affect somehow applications that use the OAuth 2 protocol and also OpenID, although OpenID is not very common in many applications. OAuth, as you may know, it's a protocol that allows you to access APIs, first obtaining the authorization of users of some sites to access those sites' APIs on their behalf. So there is a protocol for exchanging keys and tokens. And what this vulnerability is about is to is that it can somehow fool the server to redirect the user to a page that is not really the page of the site that is requesting permission to obtain the access tokens. So I even put here a diagram. Usually the auth flow, it goes like this. A user accesses a site of your a page of your site, then you have an application with some other site API, like for instance Facebook, and to obtain a token, you need to redirect with the user to a specific page of the Facebook site, and in that page the user is prompted to say if he allows the application to access certain aspects of the API on his behalf, like for instance if your application wants to obtain the basic data, the name, the birth date, the email address, and so you can request those permissions. But you can also request more advanced permissions, like posting on the user timeline. And whatever are those permissions, you need to pass them to the Facebook in this case, and the user will see a prompt telling all this site wants to access your profile on your behalf. Do you authorize it? And if the user authorizes it, the browser is redirected back to the site to complete the process. So these are the steps 1 and 2. Now, with this vulnerability, it is possible to that a malicious site creates a fake authorization page pretending to be your site. It redirects back the redirects the user to, for instance, Facebook, and except that this time it specifies a page in your site that happens to be a page that redirects to any other arbitrary site because it takes some parameter with the URL. So although the vulnerability is more on the server, because the server should verify to which pages it can redirect back to your site. This vulnerability it may happen with collaboration with vulnerable with sites that did not take some precautions. So in this article, I tell what you can do to avoid being having security issues because of this vulnerability. Because you should not count on the existing auth servers to fix the way they operate, because they, in some cases they will break many applications to fix what they need to fix. So you can do several things, like for instance avoiding having redirection pages in your site. You can also do some additional validation of destination URL, so you don't redirect to just any other site. And you can also have some verification of the destination URL by having a special hash in the redirection parameters that will somehow prevent that you redirect to malicious sites. Anyway, this is an article that I wrote just to as part of a blog that I have with a class for dealing for accessing APIs using the OAuth protocol. And this is first to clarify the users about this vulnerability, and second to tell them that if they're using this class, they are not vulnerable, because this vulnerability is exploited in those cases that the token of OAuth is returned directly to the application, which is usual when you use, for instance, OAuth with JavaScript. Anyway, Artus, you probably have been more familiar with this scenario in which you can have this type of vulnerabilities. Because you use mobile applications. And I'm not sure if the mobile flow for OAuth, how exactly it works. Do you think it's more vulnerable, or there are some precautions that to take that to avoid this problem?
No, mostly built-in SDKs, like the same the Facebook, it's uses the same the PHP uses the OAuth protocol, so it's completely the same that mobile acts as a client, and to access it needs to be authenticated. And just recently, I was talking with another colleague working also on some application that he needs to implement really secure authentication process. And we discussed OAuth as an option on how to do it. And he told me that he saw many possible vulnerabilities in this scenario. So well, I think that was one of them, and that there should be additional precautions. And I think in the end he used some kind of service that provided authentication. So, well, basically it's a pain anywhere. It's a pain on the server side, it's a pain on the mobile. Authentication is a pain, and that the article is the example of it. So it's one simple thing that you like you forget about that, and or you did not think about that site can be redirected back and request the token, and here you go.
Yes, it's a bit tricky because, and just like you said, some people use SDKs and they are not really sure what happens when they use SDKs. And this vulnerability affects many sites, including Facebook, because Facebook, from what I remember, it does not verify the return URL, it just verifies if the return URL is of a certain domain. So if you specify a return URL that goes to a redirect page, Facebook assumes that is valid, and it can expose, can allow malicious applications to act as if they are your application. So this is the concern you should have. What happens when this vulnerability is exploited is that the
other
malicious site may pretend that is your site, and if it does something bad with the user data, the Facebook will not know if it is you or if it is some other site that may cancel your application. That's, I think, in the worst case scenario.
I think in Facebook case, all external links go through their special redirect script that possibly checking for some malicious attempt, and that is probably how they try to control it. Not only that, of course, also the content where the link goes. But well, I would say they probably have something against it. I don't think that they would let it slip so easily.
No, I think the problem is that if they become more strict in verifying the URLs, many applications will break because they are not specifying URL. But I did not see any prompt. I think, in my opinion, what I would do if I were them is that they would start prompting all developers to assure that all return URLs will be to specific pages instead of any page of their domain, and they could probably allow different pages, different patterns of URLs, but it would go through a whitelist. But so far, at least, I have not seen anything. It's not just Facebook. There are many, many sites, and they are listed somehow. There is a site that talks about this vulnerability. It's called Covert Redirect, the vulnerability. Okay, it's here. So there is a site that talks about this vulnerability. It talks about many sites that are vulnerable, and not a few sites. And you can check it here if you're concerned that this vulnerability may affect your applications. You should take a look deeper at this article. Although it is an article about a specific package, it was promoted as featured, so it will appear in the main PHP Classes blog, so you can take a look. There's even a video that explains how it works. It shows the vulnerability being exploited in a live site, and that's it. If you are concerned, and I think you should be, you should take a look at least to evaluate the consequences, if it affects your applications or not. Now let's move on to another topic. This time it is a more polemic topic. It is related with an article that I wrote, but it all started, I think it was in April, that the author of the Ruby on Rails framework, David Hanemeyer Hansen, He has written an article basically stating that TDD is dead. TDD is a methodology that in simple terms, it defines that you should start developing your projects by creating first tests that will verify if your code is written, actually performs what it supposed to do. So rather than you writing code first and then write tests to verify if that code is working, it promotes the concept that you should create tests first. Initially, the test will fail because you don't have any working code. But then you implement the code, and by the time you are done with the code, you already have the tests ready to verify that it is working. And well, all it's fine. It sounds awesome because the idea is to promote code quality, and if you are promoting code quality, there shouldn't be anything bad about it. Except that in practice, there are some downsides to applying TDD. And this article is to talk about my opinion on what are those downsides. But in parallel to this article of David Hanemeyer, there were some discussions with, actually there are like five hangouts that happened between David and Kent Beck, the original promoter of the test-driven development methodology, as well with Martin Fowler, a well-known, I'll say, mentor of design patterns being applied to many projects to somehow promote the quality of software development. And the arguments were very interesting. I think it was there are like five videos. They are not small. It's like 3 hours of videos. And the discussions were interesting. On one side, there was David telling that this in practice it ends up causing more harm. I mean, there are some disadvantages. Then the actual benefits at a certain point, if you impose yourself to use TDD every time on every project since the beginning, it has some costs that are not neglectable. And the argumentation is extensive, but this article that I wrote is basically to tell about my views, not necessarily the views of David or Kent Beck or Martin Fowler, and this raised a very heated discussion even inside the PHP community, because there are some people that are very, very enthusiastic about test-driven development, and at the same time there were some misunderstandings. They got it that my article was just to discourage people to use tests, which is totally not the case. Artus, did you follow this article and discussions about TDD that happened somehow everywhere in all communities, not just PHP?
Well, I think like a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, when I was still in university, there was the talks about TDD, test-driven development, but you know, there was some folks that saying that it was awesome, you should practice it, and already then there were folks that were smirking in them and saying, well, yeah, maybe in some kind of utopia it might work, but mostly it won't. And then, like 2 years from now, there is a silence and nobody talks about it anymore. So I think it's not mainstream anymore, and I don't think that anyone ever really practices it, because well, nowadays, especially with all these technology startups that you have, you need to have a minimum viable product as fast as you can, and you can't afford put more time into such approach in testing that would make you write more than twice as much as code. you just need to create product as soon as you can, and then adopt it, and then change it, and pivot. So it's completely wasting lots of your resources to use a test-driven development.
Right, Artus, you have your own startup, right? Your startup company.
Well, I participate in lots of projects.
Yeah, and you know there is no time to lose, just like you mentioned, and this is actually one of the arguments. I did not comment explicitly on the article, but there were some discussions on Twitter, and Twitter and Reddit are like time wasters, but there are some people that are very fanatically defending TDD that some are even departing to personal insult just because they do not tolerate people with different opinions. And what I realized that most of those people are consultants, so they do not have their own businesses. They work for somebody else, and if the business of somebody else they work for fails for some reason, they do not care. It's not their fault, and it is not really not their fault. But what happens is that in business, they are dynamic, they need to change. And if the code that you developed before needs to be redone, or even scratched and written to address new business needs, you lose all of your tests. There is no thing like refactoring. Oh, let's refactor. That's when you need to do simple changes. When the projects are complex and they need to be totally rearranged, most of the code that we have done for tests is wasted. And it's not the developer's fault. The TDD methodology is, as you said, a bit utopic because it aims for an ideal world, but the world is not ideal. That's the main problem. And one thing that I wanted to ask you, so you can give your opinion, it's not just my point of view, because I have my own company, I know I have no time to lose, but you also have your own experiences. Regarding regarding your companies, do you use TDD somehow or in certain circumstances, or do you do not use it at all?
One could argue that TDD is the same as unit tests, only in one case you write it before the code, and the other case you write it after the code. So in that sense, like, we write unit tests, of course, we store them, we retest them, we do regressive testings. For some projects, maybe these tests are really extensive, but we never write it before the code, because, as you said, it can change. Like, architect maybe thought it should work that way, but in the end it works a little bit different because it was more efficient or something like that, and I don't really see a point of writing a test before writing a code.
Right, that's one of the issues that I mentioned. If you start writing tests from the beginning, chances are that you have to totally rewrite those tests. So if you can retard the creation of those tests, you probably gain a lot of time because we did not spend writing tests too early before your design was stable. And I was trying to tell this to some other people that are complaining, and they said, oh, you are not designing your projects right, because if you do TDD, your design will be right from the beginning.
No,
that's not the real world.
Exactly. I don't know. It's quite impossible to design a large project without really changes. Not only because maybe, we're not thinking about some stuff or forget something, but because, the technology changes, something new comes in, and it could change everything around you. So I don't think that it's a bad idea to design something and stick to it. You should adapt, you should be responsive to the changes. I think that's just a bad practice.
Right, and the less huge you need to change, the better it will be for maintainability, because maybe you have a product that is not in a In the ideal format of design or implementation, but if you change it, if you need to change it too much, if you need to refactor much code, it's already a lot of trouble. And if you other than that, you even have to rewrite your tests because all of a sudden the old tests completely break and your application is not broken, but the tests are broken, and you spend a lot of time fixing the tests, and your application is not broken, you spend a lot more time than you should, and it's totally a waste of time. And this is not just the opinion of David Hanemeyer Hansen or mine or yours, it's the opinion of people that have been developing software for many, many years. And it's not that we don't know about what DDD is, and it's not that we never apply it, but in reality, most of the time, we do not write tests from the scratch. We actually, to be honest, we avoid writing tests because we know that's additional work to maintain them, and so we really write tests only for things that we are not confident that they are really working, probably because they have to go through some refactor process that really needs to be done. And in that case, if you're going through a refactor process that you need to do because you have to, because it's, there's no way to progress without that refactor, write the test right before refactoring, and then refactor and see if it works. But you don't need to do this right from the beginning of the project. You can just do it on demand when you really, really need to do that. And then you'll take some time to write tests, but at least you did not spend three or four times more time developing the project and spending three or four times more money because time is money, and for instance, if you are in a startup, it's money is even tighter. And if you run out of money, you probably simply have to stop your the projects you are working on because you cannot move on without the money. And if the investor's money has run out, you need to move to something else and stop your project, and that's bad, and that happens a lot. And I don't know if you have any experience, if it happened with you or some other colleagues that you know, Artus. What is your experience about projects that have to stop because run out of money, we run out of time?
Yeah, basically I just had one project for which I was working, a great startup, and it ran out of funds, so it's ended, basically. Our contract also ended. It happens. It's sad, but yeah. It happens. Also, it might be a great product and have some perspective and potential, but if you can't make it while you have the initial investment, then it's done.
And did you use GDD somehow or tests at all in that project?
Yeah, tests certainly, but not TDD as a...
Yeah, so if, it would be fair to say if you use TDD from the start, the project would probably have died sooner.
It could be.
Yeah, because that's my point. And, but, well, there were some intensive discussions about this, and telling people about that these things happen, but they never been in a startup. They do not believe me. They probably need to actually go onto a real startup, or not even a startup, any business that needs to invest on development of their own products. You need to realize that the resources are scarce. You don't have infinite money, infinite time. And if you get stuck with the doing tests because you are a perfectionist and you want to do with the maximum quality that you think it should be, your project dies sooner. That is as simple as that. And I was talking about my opinion, your opinion, and David Helen, my opinion, but that's many, many people think like this because they already have gone through this time and money pressures. And they think it's fine, it's interesting, it's in the ideal world. It's great, but as you said, it's utopic. And one of the people that I even mentioned in the article, actually two well-known figures of software development world, are precisely the founders of Stack Overflow, Joel Spolsky, a long time software developer, a veteran, nowadays is more like the CEO of the Stack Exchange, which is the name of the company, the Stack Overflow site. And also Jeff Atwood, one of the core developers. I don't think he's working now at Stack Overflow. He has now a new project called Discourse, which is a platform for forums. But they simply put it in a podcast like in 2009, that they simply don't use it. Don't use it, GDD. It's crazy. It's too expensive. It takes too much time. And the eventual benefits that you could have from it, they are overshadowed by the costs. And, but anyway, we've been talking a lot about this and telling this to people that never had a business experience, never had their own startup, never ever worked on a company or which they are also responsible for the business of the company. It's hard, and some of them took it personally, and it was so bad. The people were so aggressive, so totally intolerant, and not willing to understand what were the points. That there was even a guy that compared me to Hitler. Which is totally absurd, because I said, "Oh, it's not just me. There are people. There are many other people that agree with me." And the guy said, "Oh, there are many people that agree with Hitler." Oh, man, that is low.
Come on.
Oh, these people are just crazy because they are so obsessed. But okay, then I also noticed that many of them were just young and inexperienced, and I'm sure the life will tell them that. It's nothing is perfect, and eventually you have to give up on doing TDD. And when I say give up, it's not giving up totally. I personally use TDD in some very specific projects. For instance, just recently I published a component for parsing markdown files, documents. Because it is one feature that has been added to the PHP cluster site and JS cluster site, the data will allow to take markdown files and parse them and then render them as HTML. So I needed to have some form of verifying that the parser is working correctly. And since Markdown has many features, some interfere with each other because some are block-oriented, other are more span-oriented, I mean character span-oriented, and some features interfere with others because some constructs may be nested, and I was not really confident that it is working well, so I created some tests before implementing some of the features. Because I really already knew what I would expect. Because there is a specification for Markdown. If there was not such specification, if there was something that was I was making up, I would not use TDD because it would still be uncertain and defined, and I could change the design later. But since it's not the case, Markdown is there are more or less standard specifications. Of the format, I could write these tests, but this is one of those rare cases on which I use TDD. In other cases, I also use tests, but I do not use TDD. I just first develop the code, and then I create, for instance, an example that is expected to take advantage to demo many features, and then I capture the output and store it in a file. Then when I add new features, I ran the tests and compare with the file that was before there before to see if there was any broken feature, or maybe it was a new feature that added some aspect that did not have before, and I still validate it, but this is not TDD. And if I discover a bug, I need to create some tests to reproduce that bug and compare it with the expected result, which will help me to fix, to determine if I have fixed correctly that bug and it will not come back. But that's still not TDD because that's after, the tests after. And all this to say that TDD, unlike David Heinemeier Hansen said, it's not dead, it has its purposes, but you should evaluate what is your case and only use it when it makes sense, at least in my opinion. What do you think, Arthur? Do you have a criteria to decide whether you use TDD or not?
Well, you actually had a really great point about the markup, that it has predefined specification, and yeah, that is a great example where you could use it. And for overall mainstream usage, I think maybe some kind of enterprise software which is already backed by a lot of money and they have lots of time and they need to provide really quality code, that they may use this approach. But for the mainstream, like we discussed, yeah, it's not suitable.
Right, and even for companies that have a lot of money, lots of time, in reality they don't. They may have lots of money, but the time is limited. Sometimes projects have to be canceled. Google has been canceling lots of projects. Sometimes the projects are not going in the right direction. They just fired the manager, the leader of Google Plus. It was not the development manager. It was the product manager. And because it did not go to the right direction, they probably need to put somebody else that moves on with the project with its goals faster. And it has to change a lot of what has been done. Okay, well, just to conclude this topic, just would like to make a brief comment about something that I was talking with a local developer here. Was telling about that in the past he was using Zen framework, and I noticed that many people that defend TDD fanatically, they are also framework fanatics. They always do with things with frameworks, and that's the way it is. And it's interesting that one thing that I noticed that as this developer was telling me that he used to use the Zen framework, and then he decided to drop it because the Zen framework from the version 1 to version 2, it dropped compatibility, and everything that used to run with Zen framework 1 in the past had to be rewritten. And now imagine if we had lots of tests written around that framework, he would have to write a lot new tests or refactor them. It would be a lot of work, and the functionality that he wanted would be the same. And all this to say, at the same time, they are so fanatic about certain frameworks. They also sort of do not mind these backwards incompatibility changes, as if it was something that would not take time and money to adapt to newer versions. And this is just a comment that I wanted to make, because I noticed there is this inconsistency of arguments among people that defend TDD heavily. Anyway, we need to move on. We are reaching the end of the podcast. I'd just like to comment briefly about an article that I wrote just to let people know about an enhancement that was done on the composer. Composer the tool to install packages from repositories, and I posted it here because the PHP classes and also JS classes allow you to install packages from Composer. They actually have their its own Composer repositories. If you have, want to install a package from any of these sites, you can use the Composer tool. And this new feature of the Composer is that it allows to automate the access to repositories that are protected with passwords. Could be sites like PHP classes and JS classes that in most cases, most packages require the user to authenticate and identify to say that it is a specific user, so the site can keep track of which users are using each package. And but this could also be for instance private repositories that your company may have. So starting now, Composer has this built-in feature to automate authentication. It works more or less like this. The first time that you are prompted to authenticate to access a certain repository, you can already tell authorize Composer to store those username and password in a file. And so next accesses to the same repositories, you won't be prompted to enter the same username and password. This is stored in a local file. Some people have shown some concerns that keeping those files with the username and password is not secure. So if they want to use it once or twice, they could leave it in a file for a while and then remove that file later. I think Composer also has a feature that allows you to remove the passwords, or at least do not store them. And this is just a brief comment. There's an article explaining more how this works. So now we are going to move on to one of the final sections of the podcast, on which we comment about the latest Innovation Award nominees, starting this time with the nominees of March. We are going to comment first on the nominees of the JS class site. Arthur, which ones would you like to comment?
Let me screen share it. Yep. So what I would want to comment on is the first class by Franz Josef Brunner from Austria, and what he created is a way to store some information, like encrypted, in images. Basically, how it is done is that it modifies image pixel, like some bits of it, and it also visually modifies, of course, but the idea is that the modification be not so large, and only one channel per pixel is modified, and that way you could somewhat securely store some information and let others retrieve it later. So as I said before, if you want to hide something, put it in the place where everyone can see it. So it's something like that. It's called cryptography, and friends provided a way to use it in JavaScript. So kudos to him.
Yes, that's an interesting. I think this is called steganography. Embed some text or some data in an image, and it is there, but you cannot see it because it does not affect much the image's pixels. And then what would be the other package that you want to comment?
And the other one is the slider. It was created by Michel Brigigallo, And well, basically, it's a usual slider that you have that changes some features. But what the interesting part is that whole configuration is based on the XML file. Basically, you can define XML file and then tell the script, well, load all the information, all the images provided there that you can define it as you see, path to the image, some title, probably dimensions and stuff like that. So that is the innovative part, that it could read from configuration from XML file. That seems pretty handy.
Yeah, that's right. That's an interesting, innovative way of defining slideshows. So on my behalf, I would like to comment on a couple of classes. Let me open the pages here. And okay. So the first one that I would like to comment is this one called JavaScript time functions. And it somehow follows the logic of animations on which you define certain effects of animations, those effects will last a certain time. Except that this is not specifically for animations. This is for calling given callback functions. So some periods of time and define also callback functions that will be used, will be called after that period of time. And this is quite interesting because this can be used for many types of purposes for that you can use in JavaScript. In JavaScript, many things happen after a certain time. And then you can use this component for that purpose. And as I was saying, this package was created by Jimmy Bow. Actually, this is an alias. This is his artistic name, and he's from Canada. And also from him, there is another package called JavaScript Pixel Plot. It is somehow also related with animation, except that instead of rendering graphics, shapes, lines, or objects, graphical objects, it just calculates the coordinates the points of those shapes will appear where they will be rendered. And without actually rendering, just calculates the coordinates. And this is interesting because it could be used, for instance, if you want to render a certain shape in some canvas, or for instance, if you want to draw some lines on in a non-graphical environment. For instance, you can want to generate some document format that has some graphics in there. You can use this class to somehow calculate the different positions of the points without actually render them, just generate the document using the calculated points. So kudos once again to Jimmy Bow from Canada for this great class. It's really different, really innovative. So now let's move on to the winners of March, but this time from PHP classes. Arthur, which ones would you like to comment?
Let me mention the first one. Let me just enable the screen sharing again. Here it is.
Well, let me just comment briefly something while we pick the classes. As you may be aware, starting this year, there is a whole competition of not just by author, but also by countries, but at least in JavaScript and JS classes, there are not as many classes as in PHP classes, so the rankings of the Innovation Award winners do not feature many packages. The author that is ahead for now it's Jimmy Bow, because he's already submitted 3 packages, so he has earned 3 points. Then there are several other authors with one package each, with less points. So what is new this year is that there is a country ranking. Accumulating, adding all the points of all authors of each country. The site computes a ranking, and so far Canada is leading with 3 packages, which are the ones from Jimmy Bow, and it is followed by Italy with 2 packages from different authors. Here are Alessandro Vernazza and Michele Prigigallo. And then there are several other countries followed with just 1 package each, which was a package submitted by individual authors. So this is still early in the year. Let's hope that in the next months more authors turn this ranking into a more competitive championship. Okay, let's wait and see. Okay, now you are going to talk about the 2 packages that you wanted.
The first one is a PHP backup class. And when someone says PHP backup, my first thought is backing up a MySQL class, but this class does more. It was created by NDP Tricks from Romania, and this class can not only backup your MySQL databases, it can also backup PostgreSQL databases, and actually backup some files from your file system using either file transfer protocol or SSH, and you can define like ini setting files, configuration files, where you can tell what you want to backup and when, and that's why I think this class is quite great and have lots of usages.
Okay, that one is from and Petrix from Romania.
Yeah. Yep.
And what about the other one that you
okay like? And the other one is quite interesting. It was created by Chi Hoang from Germany, and as it states, it does some fortune telling. Well, basically the idea is that you ask some kind of question, like was, and it randomly by some structure selects I don't know, some kind of items or
yeah,
words. They're arousing shock thunder to. So basically, is in all fortune telling, as I think. It just tells you some abstract words and you can imagine your own future from it.
Yeah.
But if we look at the code, then we see that the line that we get is actually not completely used in the selecting of the words, so it's completely random and does not correlate with what you ask. So
it's like the real fortune telling.
Yeah. It seems to be a very, very complex way.
The fortune teller roll some dice and it has nothing related with you, but it's okay.
Just an entertaining thing, and we all need a laugh, and maybe there are also usages. I don't say that there is no usages, that maybe there are also usages for this, and so I just found it interesting and wanted to mention it, so thanks to Chi Huang.
Okay, well, on my behalf, I also like to comment about a couple of classes. First one by Eustáquio Rangel from Brazil, which is basically a PDO OCI class, which is basically to use PDO library to access Oracle databases. And this is somewhat interesting because supposedly PDO would be abstract interface to access any types of databases, but for some reason this author preferred to create its own extension, actually its emulation of the PDO library for accessing Oracle databases rather than using PDO existing drivers themselves. So it has a pure implementation, a pure PHP replacement for PDO Oracle driver. And I thought this is interesting because if you did this, is because the current PDO support for Oracle is not that good. So this should be useful to many other users. And kudos to Eustachio for this submission. And the other package that I want to comment is this PHP indentation tool package by Roger Backlund from Norway. He has been an author that has been nominated for several interesting packages, and this one also does something interesting. It's not so much about indenting text, but also unindenting text. And well, I know indenting is sometimes useful. For instance, if you want to send an email that actually is a reply to some other email, I have already used this several times. For instance, if a user writes a message, I can automate a reply quoting the original message, so I have to indent the text with some characters that mark what is quoted or what is not quoted, I mean in text format. But this package also does the opposite, which is unindent, like removing existing indentation there. So this is a very, very innovative and useful from Roger. So kudos to him for his contribution. Now we practically reached the end, but I just like to also comment on the rankings of Innovation Awards so far. In the PHP Classes site, in terms of individual authors, we so far Orazio Prince from Italy is leading with 2 packages and 11 points, followed right behind him by Roger Backlund, who just mentioned about him. He submitted 3 packages, but he still only has 9 points. So this championship by author is warming up, and then they are followed for several other authors with 1 package each, and there is even an author from Latvia, and yeah. It's not Arthur's. There is Roland's cousins. Do you know him? Is he a colleague or?
No, unfortunately, I have no idea.
Latvia is a very large country, you don't know.
Yeah, anymore. Very, very large.
And then, now, by country, we have so far, Brazil is leading with 3 packages and 17 points. And this is interesting because there are 3 packages sent by 3 authors, but none of them is the leading author. They are ranked, well ranked, but they are not the leaders. So these 3 authors are contributing for Brazil to be first so far, followed right after by Italy with 14 points, also 3 packages, and Norway with 9 points, with also 3 packages. So it is not sufficient to publish many packages. You also have to publish very innovative packages so they can get voted more by the users, and the authors earn more points and their respective countries rank better. So,
but
thing, as
most
I said,
probably there won't be any packages from Brazil this month. Or maybe
yeah,
even
because everybody is in the World Cup. But I think yeah. the rest of the world is also paying attention to the World Cup. Except for some countries that are already kicked out of the competition. Too bad. I'm not going to mention any names because it can backfire at my own country.
Yeah, it could.
And let's focus on this championship that will go on until the end of the year. So we determine who will be the country that will earn the great prize, which will be this this great elephant here, and accept that the country that wins the prize, all the authors that contributed for their countries to win the prize will get their own elephant. So this is a symbolic trophy. Of course, it's not even the value of the plush toy. It's more a symbol of dedication, and many people appreciate it. And actually, I have some authors that were even nominated to the Innovation Award. They will ask, "How can I get one of those elephants?" Oh, it's simple. Just be the winner of the year, and you get your own elephant, or at least contribute for your country to win. So, go and get your colleagues from your country that have their can submit innovative packages. Encourage them to submit them. The sooner, the better, because the more nominees of your country submit innovative packages, the greater is the chance for your country to win. And I hope that this is a fun and encouraging initiative to promote something that is ultimately is great for everybody, to have more packages for more useful purposes rather than having the same package for the same purposes. And I hope this comes out great. So with this, we practically ended this podcast. I would like to thank you again, Arthur, for coming. I don't know if you have any final remarks, anything you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I will stay with JavaScript better.
Okay. Well, on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.